It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, a huge tech week. Microsoft buys Nokia. Samsung announces the Galaxy Gear. We're going to talk about Google and, of course, next week's iPhone announcement. Plus, Kit Kats. This Week in Tech, up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 422, recorded September 8th, 2013. 9 degrees of whimsy. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT9. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files for you automatically and continually for only $59.99 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with coworkers and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech. Since the 49ers are in halftime, I think we could do like a 5-minute show real quickly before the second half of the game. I'm Leo Laporte, joining us from iMore.com. We thought he'd be here, but he's decided not to come to San Francisco for iOS 7. But he does have all the colorful bubbles, Mr. Rene Ritchie, iMore.com. Nice to see you, Rene.
Nice to see you too, Leo.
Are you disappointed? I guess what you got a little sickness and you can't come down here.
Yeah, it's okay. I didn't get invited anyway, so I would just have been watching. I would be doing alt.iPhone event from across the street.
Oh, well,
anyway,
you don't need to be there for that. You stay in Montreal. Yeah. Also with us, we haven't seen him in a while. I'm so glad to have him back. Dan Patterson, formerly of was it NBC, CBS, some network radio?
ABC.
ABC, some network radio news operation. Then Occupy Wall Street happened. You did an amazing job of covering that on Storify using new media entirely to cover it, which was awesome. And you've kind of gone the freelance route, which is, I think, so commendable. You're trying to reinvent journalism.
Well, trying. You know, I did exactly what we talk about pretty frequently on the network here, which is I left my job at ABC intentionally to run a podcasting network last year. And I made just enough money to successfully run a failed company. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. And I did that all within the studios here at Sumall in New York City. And now I do data journalism. So we're provided big buckets of data by partners like the Clinton Foundation or Ashton Kutcher's We Are Thorn. They give us big buckets of data and say, find stuff in here. And so I work with a team of analysts to go through and find really interesting stuff about, you know, in the spring I studied the spread of child pornography on the web. And right now I'm studying the spread of prescription drugs and how the web influences that. So really fascinating stuff now.
No kidding. And Dane Atkinson, of course, Sumall is a sponsor. We got to distinguish Sumall.com, which is the sponsor. And frankly, they're a great company that offers free kind of sophisticated business analysis to customers. You work for the Sumall Foundation, the nonprofit arm, Sumall.org.
Yep, and I certainly don't want to plug anything or get those wires confused. You know, they do a lot of, you know, we talked about in the pre-show, kind of subsidized journalism, that there has to be a space for interesting long-form work to exist, and they are subsidizing this work.
Well, we just want to say that this show brought to you by Kit Kat, and yes. Why would sponsorship ruin anything? Anyway, we're thrilled to have you, Dan. It's really great to have you and see you again. I haven't seen you in ages, and I think we'd like to see more of you. This is a great opportunity for us to get your services. And I have to say that this is a fascinating area for journalism to explore, this idea that big data might offer up nuggets of information that isn't immediately obvious.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that we are living in the age, particularly with wearable computing, that I think we'll talk a little bit about later in the show. This is the day and age of bending the data curve and using information instead of big, scary buckets of data, making it personal and accessible.
Yeah, I love that. Well, great. It's good to have you. Appreciate it. We wanted to give people the disclaimer up front, not that we'll be talking about some all in any way. There is so much big news. I don't even know where to start. This is the week that Microsoft bought Nokia. Android announced version 4.4 of Android. KitKat in a deal that they say no money was exchanged. Yeah, right. Apple has a little bit of a party coming up on Tuesday. We could talk about that. And we found out that the NSA knows a lot more about us than we even thought. Not to mention the Galaxy Note 3, the Galaxy Gear, an all-new Kindle Paperwhite, a potential for a free smartphone from Amazon. The Yahoo logo is here. But most importantly, CBS and Time Warner have finally buried the hatchet. What a shock. The week before the NFL season kicks off.
Shocking.
Shocking. I don't know. I don't know where to start. What's the you pick, Renee. What's the big story of the week? At least story number one here. Is it Nokia?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it has to be Nokia just because it changes the entire... I mean, Apple's going to announce a new phone. Google's going to put out a new version of their software. But Microsoft is buying a first-party hardware manufacturer.
Yeah.
And it's such a perfect encapsulation of Ballmer's job at CEO. And it reminds me of that Karate Kid movie where, you know, you either make the software yes or you make the hardware no. But he's always kind of so-so about it.
Yeah, in fact, according to All Things D, they've done a lot of All Things D seems to have a lot of information about what happened in the behind the scenes negotiations, which makes me think that perhaps they're being fed this information from Microsoft. But according, I think it was All Things D that said that Ballmer was the one who actually initiated this conversation with Nokia back in January, and. They met at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, which was in the spring, and had a lot of difficulty coming to any kind of agreement at all. In other words, Microsoft wanted Nokia long before Nokia could see their way clear to selling to Microsoft.
And it was interesting that Maps was a huge sticking point. That just shows you the value of services compared to hardware these days.
Yeah, Microsoft wanted the Here Maps. They use it in Bing. It is their mapping tool. And Nokia was completely unwilling to sell. In fact, that was the thing. That was the final piece of the deal that made it possible. Nokia licensed access to Maps to Microsoft, and Microsoft agreed to so that Microsoft could modify it. But they agreed to contribute back, I think, any modifications they made into the code set.
Source level license.
Yeah.
It seems almost as though Microsoft bought established systems. And I know that this idea has been floating around for the last week or so. But I mean, Nokia had to retain some sort of identity. You know, they can't just be a galoshes manufacturer, go back to that. And they had to retain something. And IP seems to be the thing, or at least the software. And Here seems to be the thing they really stuck on. But Microsoft was able to get these established systems. And we can kind of assume that they also got things like supply chain, and they'll be able to make their process more efficient by this. But they didn't really get anything that would do anything more than kind of make them feature complete within an already crowded marketplace.
Was it the Joy of Tech that did the cartoon that implied that basically ELOP was inserted into Nokia to make sure that the company failed so that Microsoft could get a good deal from them.
The evaluator.
I don't think that's what happened, although you might be a little suspicious about the whole thing, right?
It's hard to see what benefits Nokia in any of this. I mean, I think Ben Thompson made that argument that, you know, this helps Microsoft because Nokia was not doing well with Windows Phone. Arguably, they might have done better with Android because their claim to fame was always fantastic hardware. And given the marketplace for Android, they could have been the premier Android manufacturer with the best hardware, the best cameras all around, and that might have been a much better business for them. And if that changed hands, Microsoft would have very little visibility in smartphones because Samsung and HTC are not falling all over each other to make Windows phones anymore. But Microsoft, you know, they get to solidify their place in the market now. They get to make sure that Windows phones keep getting produced, and they have the money to do it.
Well, and Nokia kind of existed, you know, in the early days, the gestation period, the first, you know, maybe 18 or 36 months of Android, Nokia was still kind of dinking around with their own operating systems, and they didn't really integrate with Android at what could have been a very pivotal time. And now they almost need this deal with Microsoft to have a purpose.
Did they, though? You know, what one of the things that might have triggered this negotiation is the fact that Nokia's deal with Microsoft ended at the end of next year, end of 2014. Mm. And, of course, there were a lot of rumors. It's probably too late, by the way. If it were to end the end of this year, then maybe it would have made sense for Nokia to pivot into Android. I mean, I would buy a 1020 based on Android in a heartbeat because of the great hardware. Nokia makes great hardware. They've always been a crappy software company. They made the first smartphones. I owned a few of them, like the E71.
Symbian and Mego.
And Symbian was great. Mego, I kept buying things like the N900.
Yeah.
And the crap software really killed what was brilliant hardware. They still have Asha, which is an inexpensive platform, popular in places like India.
The big knock against them was that they were an engineering-led company. The engineers would figure out the hardware, and then they'd try to slap some software on it to make it work, and that wasn't going to be viable in a post-iPhone, post-Android
world.
Had
they been able to adapt Android like now, wouldn't they have a chance, a shot at it? Or is it too commoditized an operating system? There's too much competition.
Samsung occupies that place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be exactly that Samsung really, really did this forward-leading, very aggressive strategy a year and a half ago, and that might have just made it more difficult. Yeah, it might have been just too late. Microsoft also might be getting, I mean, this could be a little too out there, but Nokia is also very well entrenched, particularly with distribution into the developing world. And Microsoft could have seen that as an opportunity to say, well, okay, Europe, North America, maybe we can't fight the fight here, but we can certainly, weave our fingers into the rest of the world. And that's certainly something that Nokia has done competently for a long time.
Here's, by the way, the best – this All Things D-Piece is great. I mean, they actually cover this from beginning to end. But the best part is the meeting on the weekend of May 24th in the London offices of Microsoft's law firm. On Friday, May 24th, a potential deal was starting to get some momentum in some areas, they write, while other topics remained sticky. By evening, the parties from Microsoft and Nokia were the only ones left in the building. Each side had retreated to separate parts – of a floor to go over what the other side had presented. At one point, Ballmer and Smith were walking back to their conference room together. But and Ballmer, in a moment, he was gone, and there was a loud scream, the kind of yell that only comes from the uncommonly strong lungs of the voluble Microsoft CEO. The roar startled the Nokia team, who figured Ballmer had reacted particularly negatively to one of their proposals. While those in the Microsoft conference room had no idea what was going on, they heard the sound of people running. It turned out Ballmer had walked into a clear glass coffee table and had tripped on it and gashed his forehead. The Microsoft security team ran off in search of a first aid kit. They patched him up and negotiations continued. But this...
A contact sport, Leo.
So this was back in May, and it goes back and forth. They met in Botvik, which is a small town 30 kilometers west of Nokia's offices in Finland. This sounds like something straight out of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I could see them coming in a train to a snow-drifted town. Anyway, they eventually were able to work out the details just recently. So this was a Ballmer deal. Maybe his last deal. A lot of people have wondered if perhaps, like the Apple acquisition of Next, they're getting not only an operating system, not only a phone man. Well, they're not getting an operating system, a phone manufacturer, but also getting a CEO. Does this put Stephen Elop, former Microsoftie, running Nokia, in as the front runner now as the next CEO at Microsoft?
Well, puts him in the mix. I don't know about the front runner.
But he's running the devices and services division.
Steve Jobs came back to Apple, and he brought a culture with him. I mean, Steve Jobs had a singular vision of focus, and he created he turned Apple into a product. There's no evidence at all that Stephen Elop is anything like a product visionary or a cultural phenomenal like Steve Jobs.
Far from it, actually.
Yeah, Nokia got money out of this, and they've apparently already accessed their line of credit, and they needed money badly. So you can see it from Nokia's point of view. But in my West Wing reference for the week, there's no indication that Microsoft will be Microsoft. You know, let Microsoft be Microsoft. They're so obsessed with being Apple. I mean, granted, IBM is not a sexy computer saving, because they're a customer-saving facing business, but it's an amazing business. And Microsoft is, with this move, saying, we don't want that. We don't want to be enterprise.
That was what was in their
consumer.
That was in their future until they did this. And they say, and you know, Microsoft says, we're a devices and services company. Devices, Windows Phone, Surface tablets with Windows RT. Now nobody's going to make that except Microsoft and Nokia. In fact, you can pretty much kiss goodbye. Everybody's going to make Windows phones, right? Why would you make Windows phones if Microsoft owns Nokia? That's it. So nobody's going to make RT. Nobody's going to make Windows phones. Microsoft's going to make Windows and Office, but that's kind of... Is that the services part of the business? This is Microsoft in a Hail Mary, it almost feels like.
Office 365. I mean, that's their best product right now. Azure is a fantastic product, but it seems like they give it very little attention compared to failed tablet and phone projects, which is very interesting given, I mean, they've never made good devices. Even Xbox was an accident and came with tremendous write-downs, and it's a small niche category, much smaller than smartphones.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see them put so much focus and so much of this on an area that, it's like Apple with internet services, an area that they've been so unsuccessful in their history.
So is this good for Microsoft or bad for Microsoft? Let's sum up.
I mean, Leo, you could be absolutely right that this is a Hail Mary, and this might not be a binary. This is absolutely a Hail Mary for Microsoft, but it's also a company that is really good at landing those Hail Marys, right? I mean, for whatever reason, they've been able to stick around. They've never been the sexiest. They've never been the most innovative, or at least for 20 years haven't been the most innovative, but they have always been able to kind of march with iterative change successfully. It's the same. To me, this really feels like Internet Explorer 1 to Internet Explorer 5, right? Both were kind of junky, but they did something and they stayed relevant. Nobody cared, but they, you know, there were a few people loved them, but they stayed relevant.
Well, and then you also have to look at the fact that Microsoft has given a seat on the board to an activist investment group, Value Act, a hedge fund. As Ballmer steps down, Value Act was threatening them with a proxy fight, which apparently Microsoft thought was so scary that they're giving a seat on the board to this Value Act. Now, Value Act owns less than 1% of the company, but it's still worth billions. I think they have a $2 billion stake in Microsoft, $2.2 billion at current prices.
It's hard to see where this is successful. I mean, if 3 years ago Microsoft had put out an X Phone and an X Slate that had Halo and Gears of War and fantastic Exchange and Office support and, you know, SharePoint and everything like that, and really leveraged the things that make Microsoft great, could have been a fantastic product. It could have been on the shelf. They could have had Call of Duty Special Edition right next to an iPhone. But it's hard to see what they can do so many years later when iOS and Android are so far ahead, and everyone, HTC, making fantastic phones that are as good as Nokia phones, you know, where there's space for them.
According to John Pechkowski, writing on All Things D, the number one thing Microsoft is going to add to Nokia, they're going to get better names. Steve Ballmer says, I think we could probably do better for consumer names than Nokia, Lumia, Windows Phone 1020. Oh, good.
Windows Phone is a problem, though.
Company that created Windows XP 64-bit edition for 64-bit extended systems, says Pechkowski. These two companies belong together. Holy cow. You saw so many editorial cartoons. One in the New, I think it was the New York, no, maybe it was the Economist. Two giant fishes swimming along, Google and Apple. And then these two little fishes, Microsoft and Nokia, and the Microsoft fish is eating the Nokia fish. It's like, not even players in this game. You know, it's the 4% company bought it, buying the 2% company. Still interesting to watch. I'm rooting for them. Microsoft. People think I hate Microsoft. Microsoft made the PC revolution. Without somebody, a company coming along and saying, this is a standard that developers can write to, we would not have the PC revolution. This is an important company to the ecosystem. And frankly, if you're Finnish, I imagine you think the same of Nokia.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hope for the best for both. Nokia, do they still have the Galosh division? Or do they get out of that entirely when they moved into phones?
I have Nokian tires on my car, winter tires.
Do you have Nokia tires?
Really?
Nokian, yeah. I think the brand has changed slightly, but I believe they originated in the same place.
Ooh. Huh. It's a 150-year-old company. There's the galoshes. It's a 150-year-old company. I mean, the phones are only the latest. It just cracks me up. Nintendo was a playing card company.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's only IBM made typewriters.
Yeah. IBM made typewriters and calculators. We're talking about the week's tech news. I've got Kit Kat bars, and we're gonna share them with the entire crew in just a little bit. But first, let's take a little break and talk about Squarespace.com, the greatest place to create your new website. Squarespace is hosting. When you say hosting, that sounds boring. It's just the best hosting that never goes down that you ever saw. And you put on top of that the amazing Squarespace content management system. Now you got something really amazing. A beautiful-looking website that never goes down. Great for bloggers. Great for people who are selling products because they've got commerce. Great for somebody who wants to create a site as a portfolio. If you're a photographer or an artist, you've got to take a look at Squarespace.com. We've been asking people, because we want to see their sites, your sites, to tweet us with a link to your Squarespace website. Use the hashtag TwitSquarespace. Hashtag TwitSquarespace, and we'll take a look at your website. Every Squarespace site is mobile responsive. That means I'll tell you what, let's do it. Let's go right here. So you go to squarespace.com, click to get started. You get to start a site for free. First 2 weeks are free. So you can really play with the engine. It does have importers for all the major blog APIs. So you can import all your content, all your images, all the links are preserved. Even the comments get imported. Let's pick a template. Here's Momentum. Now, one of the first things you see when you go through the templates is other sites designed around that template. And it just shows you that every Squarespace site is unique. Your design style will come through. You don't have to be a web designer. You can do this all with drag and drop. Introducing the Portland Press. This is cool. This is great. I don't even know what they make, and I like them already. It looks like they make felt buckets, but that... That can't be true. Coffee making equipment for the home. It's a French press for a mason jar. What? See? Look, they've got embedded video on the Squarespace site. They've got a gallery. And there you go. I mean, this is amazing. Squarespace.com. So pick that template. Customize it all you want. You can hook up all of your social media. You can have it all flowing into there. I mean, I'm telling you, in the first day, you'll be amazed at what you can do. And the beauty is the content is completely separate. Isn't that funny? The content is completely separate from the design. So you can play with all the designs. Do whatever you want. Once you've got the site, play with it for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, then take a look at the amazing pricing. Squarespace starts at just $8 a month. If you want, that's if you buy an annual plan. For the unlimited plan, which is the most popular, unlimited pages and galleries, unlimited blogs and bandwidth, unlimited storage, $16 a month. That's amazing. That includes a custom domain when you get the annual plan, and they'll hook it all up for you. Commerce is just $24 a month. They don't take a cut. No transaction fees, fully integrated e-commerce, unlimited physical or digital products and digital products. You also get things like inventory tracking, tax and shipping calculations, coupon controls. I just love it. Give it a try today, squarespace.com. And when you set up your site, send us a link. We'd love to see it. Tweet it. Don't forget to put your site in there with the hashtag TwitSquarespace. Squarespace.com. Oh, I forgot to tell you the best part. We'll give you 20% off. On Squarespace, on a new Squarespace site, when you use the offer code TWIT9. Try it for free. You don't need a credit card. When you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIT and the number 9. We're in September, the 9th month, and you'll get 20% off. So Kit Kat is a brand owned in the U.S. by Hershey, but it's actually a Nestle brand. And it's a pure coincidence that the letter K is the next letter in the Android galaxy, and we thought it was going to be key lime pie. In a surprise announcement this week, Google says Android 4.4 is KitKat. They also said no money changed hands. Do you believe that?
Barter economy, Leo.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah, right.
Yeah. They didn't give us any money per se, You will be able to buy specially marked Kit Kat bars with Android logos on it and play coupons on the inside. But they're not giving us any money for it.
It's just like old school. Barter is the name of the game. It's like old school radio. That's exactly how this deal seems. Yeah. It's fun.
I guess it's fun. It kind of bugs me because I feel like open source products should not be named after commercial products. But I guess it's Google's to name. And it is tasty.
What does Google, I understand Nestle's, you know, there is some risk, I guess, if KitKat is a bad OS, but where, is this just a quirk of Google? That's what I've been racking my brain trying to understand.
Yeah, how did this happen?
Right. The details seem kind of fuzzy, although, I mean, they are emerging, and I like the fact that they say at least no money changed hands, and it does seem kind of fun, but also, I mean.
There's money changed hands, consideration. Yeah, right. Changed hands. It's very disingenuous of Google to say, well, they didn't actually give us any cash. Because there's definitely, this is a commercial.
Well, they're spending money on promoting Android on their packaging.
And do you think that every time I say Android 4.4, if I say KitKat, do you think people are going to not eat an ungodly number of KitKat bars just by the power of suggestion? I've already had four just during the show.
This, you know, the Willy Wonka thing with the, you know, the giveaway that could, you know,
the
be
golden
inside.
Ticket.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that does feel very old school radio. Of course, like maybe no cash changed hands, but this seems like a very odd promotion.
Hmm. When you're rich, you're eccentric. Okay, Leo, it's not crazy when you're rich.
It bugs me a little bit. Now, I shouldn't be bugged. I mean, we were thinking of selling naming rights to the studio. I mean, I'm commercial. I have to make money. I understand that. It seems like. I don't want to support this by saying KitKat every time I talk about Android. I'm going to say Android 4.4. Is it all right?
It's not 5.0. It's 4.4. They're sticking with that 4.
And what's L going to be? Little Debbie snack cakes? Lifesavers?
Give me a break. Give me a break. Break me off a piece of that KitKat.
See what I'm saying? This is the
exactly it.
If I'm Nestle, this is the best deal they have ever made. If they gave Google no money for this. This is the. I bet you already. I would love to see the numbers. Get to work, Dan.
But it's also.
I would love to see
Leo,
the KitKat sales and how they've been impacted by this.
Because one of the big problems that Google faces is the Android brand, because people go in looking for Samsung phones or maybe HTC phones or maybe a Nexus, and the Android amongst normal human beings, civilians, doesn't have a very big profile. But now you've got the little green Android character on every KitKat bar, and people, wait a minute, there's this Android thing that actually runs my phone.
This is clever, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very clever deal. It's just it's a weird deal. I mean, of all of the news stories we kind of could have predicted coming this year, this is one that this is open source software, and it is something that while Google is kind of funny, it's weird to see this type of brand association.
How many of you in the live studio audience are craving a KitKat bar right now? See, it works. Here, have...
It's also not open source. It's opening. I mean,
right.
Honeycomb was never open source. So there's
look at this. Making friends by throwing candy, ladies and gentlemen. I don't. All right. Well, here, pass this around. Did everybody get one? Candy. Anybody want one that didn't get one? Oh, I'm hitting the lights. Yeah.
You know, surely the very smart people at Google want to quantify this in some way, right?
Don't hit Chad.
I'm sorry. What'd you say, Dan? I was busy throwing KitKat bars. It says an Oprah. You're not going to get a car, okay? L is for Lexus, as one of our audience members. I'm going to wear the hat. I don't know. I think it's a little annoying, but I guess I can't really complain. You got an advertising company. Some people are pointing out, in fact, another Joy of Tech comic, that Nestle is not the cleanest brand name in history, is it? Nestle associated with selling baby formula in the third world, associated with some nasty labor practices. Here's a... Here's the Joy of Tech comic. Mommy, I'm scared. What's wrong, honey? There's a green ghost on this chocolate bar. Oh, don't be silly. It's just a Google Android. It can't hurt you. So I shouldn't worry that an omnipresent technology company that knows everything we do online and with our phones is joining forces with a multinational food corporation that has a long history of nefarious activity, including child labor, the promotion of infant formula, over breastfeeding, rainforest deforestation, price fixing, and whose CEO once said the idea of water as a basic human right was extreme? Daddy, Daddy, we're scared! I think that says it all. It isn't necessarily the cleanest brand to be associated with, but who doesn't love Nestle, right? Nothing to say, huh? Did that dramatic reading choke you up? All right, enough to say about Kit Kat. There are other Google stories. In fact, an interesting revelation about Google Chrome apps, and I'm really curious what you guys think about this. Google has launched Chrome apps for Windows 8, perhaps revealing their secret plan all along. I kind of mocked the idea of Chrome OS, but these are essentially taking the extensions that you add to your Chrome browser in Chrome OS and making them apps. They're going to do it on Mac, too. They haven't yet, but they currently are apps on Windows 8.
Is it native client, Leo? I wasn't sure.
Yeah, you don't. You have to have the browser installed, I believe. But I don't think you. Yeah, they show up as like little. There it is in the docs. They show up as little mini apps.
Yeah, this seems like the next native client for a while.
Yeah, and it seems like the next iteration of, you remember Chrome tabs as apps that you could save as a desktop, and you know, initially with HTML5 they were supposed to function much like a native app, and this seems like the next iterative step for that.
It does, but okay, so no big deal, or does this kind of make Google's Chrome? What it tells me is that Chrome is where Google's putting all its
It's IE6 eggs. Plus ActiveX all over again. It took us 20 years to get back to a closed internet.
Okay, never mind then.
Well, I mean, Google is, I mean, they forked WebKit, they made Blink, they've been doing V8 for a long time, they've been working on native client, and it looks like they're going to be doing technology that requires you to write to Chrome instead of to write to the to the web, which was the open platform. And for a company who historically, superficially embraced the open web, it's that whole Adobe thing, you know, don't be locked down to a platform, be locked down to our platform instead.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Vertical versus horizontal lockdown.
Yeah, and it also increases the top of mind, right? And the more these things function much like apps and I see them in that context outside of just the browser context, the more I think about and simply interoperate with the Google ecosystem. And it's one more, I don't think it's a big deal, like this is a huge deal, but it is a big deal in that this is one more big footstep of Google into your life. And once that step is taken, it's hard to bring that back.
I mean, like some people have said that it's open source, so other people can go ahead and make Chrome apps, or at least add, like Safari could theoretically add support for this. But when you're in the real world, in a pragmatic world, Apple and Microsoft, you know, I don't know what Firefox will do, will probably don't want to introduce competitors' technology into their products. They would do it if the World Wide Web Consortium came out with a native client standard. So it's filling space in the market, but it's doing it in a way that's particular to one vendor, which is always dangerous on the web.
Google also, when they rolled out KitKat, you know, and they put the statue on the Google lawn of the KitKat, you know, Android. They have jelly beans, they have donuts, they have eclairs. I'm not sure if they did this on purpose. My guess is they did. There's a happy-go-lucky fella in the rollout video taking a picture with an odd-looking Nexus phone. Let's zoom in a little closer. Why, that looks like not the Nexus 4, who very, by the way, conveniently, the young lady next to him is using. So for comparison purposes, this guy doesn't even look like he's paying attention. It's looked like somebody said, okay, run out there and hold up the phone and pretend you're taking a picture. It feels to me like an intentional leak of what I guess would be the Nexus 5. At the same time as this happened, and Google pulled down the video from YouTube. Oh, well.
Oh, oops.
Oops. The same time this happened, the FCC got a filing for a phone that, interestingly enough, matches this exactly. And people were able to piece them together and show that they are, in fact, the same. Bigger sensor, bigger phone screen, obviously. Looks nice. When will we... Now I'm sad because I got Jeff Jarvis to open his Moto X on This Week in Google on Thursday, and he's going to be mad at me. Because he's been waiting for a Nexus 5. Is this, in fact, the Nexus 4 is out of stock in the 8 gigabyte model. Is this, so that means the 5 is imminent?
It seems like it. It seems that Google is at the very least committed to an iterative process with these very pure experiences. But surely they're going to wait for something after Apple and then try to, right?
Well, unless they announce it the same day. I would love to see that.
Yeah, right.
It feels like Google's powerful enough to start doing Apple. The old thing on Apple is that they would always do something to spoil CES or to spoil whatever keynote was at CES. And it feels like Google and Android are powerful enough to give them a little bit of their own medicine, which isn't a bad thing.
You think Tuesday they'll announce the Nexus 5? Oh!
No.
Or Wednesday or the iPhone 5S review day. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities to screw them a little bit.
Oh, yeah. That I want to see that. That would be funny. Samsung, of course, jumped the boat a little bit. And I think you have to figure that their September 4th announcement date has something to do with a September 10th announcement date for an iPhone. They wanted to scoop them a little bit. They announced the Galaxy Note 3. And it kind of an incremental improvement on the Note 2. A little bit bigger, 5.7 inches. A little bit thinner. A much better
screen. Found the stitched leather, Leo.
Yeah, now, what the hell? It's got a stitched leather-like. Is it leather?
You know, it's faux stitched leather. You can get it in pink faux stitched leather if you like.
Pleather.
Yeah.
It's got a pleather back with stitching.
I don't think this was an iPhone thing, though. I mean, I think this event was scheduled for a long time. This was just their cycle for the Note 3.
It's at IFA, and that's when IFA is.
Yeah. So. Yep.
Although, you got to think that Apple's announcement September 10th, which coincides with IFA, was planned at...
They've had that event the first week of September for 4 or 5 years.
So. Come on. You got to let me have a little conspiracy theory.
The Nexus 5. There's your conspiracy theory.
Are you excited about the Note 3? Does that look like something to pay attention to? I can't wait to feel the rich feeling of pleather in my palm.
You know, I really am shocked, at least anecdotally, the degree to which I will see a Note. You know, I'm here in New York City, and I see almost every device conceivable on the subway, and I see that Note and Note 2 on a daily basis.
I love it.
I would be very surprised if this doesn't sell well. And it seems like it's carried by professionals or people who are, you know, doing something that does require that additional screen real estate, which makes it a little less silly. I think pink might be targeting an interesting
demographic. I think Subway's a perfect place for this because you don't want to carry a tablet, but you want to kind of have a phone with a little more space on it.
Right, particularly if you're a professional. You need that extra time, right? Yeah.
This is going to have windowing. It's got the stylus, the S Pen, and some new stylus features, hovering and so forth. But I thought the most interesting feature written about by Kevin Fitchard at GigaOhm is this new chip from Quantense. This will be the first appearance of the Quantense ET chip. It's an envelope tracking chip, which could make a significant difference, he says, in battery life. It modifies how the radio works with LTE. As anybody knows who got an early LTE phone, that is a real power drain. It's because of the very peaky nature of the LTE signal. The phone, in order to maintain a uniform envelope of power, has to kind of overdrive the phone. This Quantense chip allows the radio to fluctuate in response to the signal fluctuation and apparently can save a significant amount of juice.
LTE is funny in that if you're on a really good LTE signal, it's much better for battery because the chip powers up. It sucks down the data quickly and powers off. But in areas where you're close to LTE and it has to drop off, anytime the radio screams for a signal, it's bad. The interesting thing to me about this, though, is that in North America, big phones haven't historically done as well. I mean, the iPhone, mostly, if you look at AT&T or Verizon figures and certainly Apple Store figures, it outsells all bigger screen phones combined. But both Sasha Sagan and Ben Thompson turned me around on this. When you look at outside the U.S. markets where people, a phone might be a primary computer and people can't necessarily get a phone and a tablet, to them, the computer part becomes more important than the phone part. And that's where devices like the Galaxy Mega and the Note 3 and the LG, I forget what it's called, the giant LG phone, become much more important to emerging markets. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting in Japan, of course, phones are very different because of this. People tend to have a smartphone, a sophisticated smartphone computer, instead of having a desktop or a laptop computer. I think that's
a TV antenna.
Pardon? It has a TV antenna?
In Korea and Japan, whenever they come back, like the LG models we get from Korea have pull-out TV antennas.
Oh, I want that. That sounds great.
Yep.
They claim 25% overall device battery life improvement with this Quantense EG chip. on LTE. I'm in an area where LTE is up and down, and I often go into the phone and turn off LTE if I can, because it really can kill the battery. So solving this will be good. This will not be exclusive to the Note 3. It's just the first one to have it, but that's encouraging. They also announced...
Right.
I don't know what to call it. Is it a watch? I guess it's a watch. The Galaxy Gear.
Watch.
It's a big-ass watch. And it will only work with the Note 3 initially, although they say with the update to 4.3 on, I guess it needs Bluetooth low energy, right? So the Galaxy S4 will work with it, and maybe even the Galaxy S3 once the update to the Android comes.
There are two or three.
Pardon me?
There are two or three models that it will work with.
All Samsung.
Yeah.
Although it's not clear. It's possible that this will work with a non-Samsung device at some point.
It might do basic Bluetooth stuff with a non-Samsung, right, but none of the special stuff.
Well, how special is this special stuff?
This is exactly like what Apple's not going to make for a watch.
Yeah, this is like smartphones right before the iPhone. You remember all those mock-ups of the iPhone, right? That's exactly what this is like. It's, you know, people who can't really conceive of something that is elegant and game-changing, just putting the entire kitchen sink on your wrist.
You're seeing the rubber band has a camera on it, on the front part. Now, that means you can only wear it on your right wrist unless you want to take a lot of selfies, which, given the state of the internet, that actually might be the intention. Right. I don't know. It's not a super good camera, but hey, you got a camera. You can also talk into the phone. It's got a microphone and speaker, so you could use it Dick Tracy watch style. But it does need a telephone to bind to for internet access, right? And for phone telephony, obviously.
There's no radio in it.
No radio. Is it a touchscreen?
Yes.
Okay, that's an improvement, at least on the Pebble. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it depends if you value the e-ink display for its longevity rather than the capacitive touchscreen for its, you know, performance. Right.
They're claiming pretty good battery life, more than a day.
The problem with the battery life, when you get to manufacturers and they say 24 hours of battery life, almost every one of them include 8 hours of you sleeping in that measurement. And if it's 48 hours, it's 2 days of you sleeping. So that translates usually into 10 to 16 hours of real life.
That's really true. Because these things don't really use much juice when you're asleep, when the screen's off. Yeah.
What will be most interesting with this is perhaps on the business angle, simply the packaging of this. How selling this as a standalone device seems like a non-starter, but packaging it with something else, subsidized, I can see that working, maybe not in North America, but I can certainly see this bundled with, you know, whatever else you get for free if you're buying this somewhere. But I mean, how they intend to market this just seems like it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
They're telling me in the chat room that the screen flips around. So if you put it on your left wrist, you just flip the watch band around and the camera would still point out and the screen would just rotate.
Do you remember, Leo, right when there was a lot of iPad rumors, Steve Ballmer stormed the stage at CES and showed off the HP Slate just so Microsoft could be first?
Which was never released, right?
Yeah, it was released and it had a little drawer. You could press a button, it would pop out and give you your certified Windows sticker.
That's the state we're in right now.
Yeah, it's
Do you think, though, really seriously, is there some magic thing that Apple could pull out that will make a watch, that an iWatch or whatever, that will be so awesome, so amazing, that it will be, you know, light years ahead of this thing? I mean, really, is that magic? Is that lightning in a bottle going to happen again?
Apple could certainly do that. They could certainly create something that captures the imagination. It just may not capture the imagination like that real dopamine spike of the first iPhone release and the iPad release. It will be something that makes some people go, huh, kind of cool. And it will be more elegant than this, but it's not going to be the kind of thing that make us all go, OMG.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple's thing isn't that. I mean, the iPhone accidentally did that and the iPad a little bit. But, you know, we discussed last time, Leo, a lot of people said the iPad was unimaginative, just a big iPhone. Apple will do something that they hope. I mean, watches are a much smaller category than phones or tablets and consumer electronics. They'll do something that they think a lot of mainstream people, for whom a smartphone is too much, you know, technology, maybe they still want to have a feature phone, but they want either the informational benefits of all their stuff being displayed on a small screen or the health stuff like the glucose reader, blood pressure reader. And it'll look more like a band than a phone. It probably won't look like a watch. It'll have a watch app the way the iPhone has a phone app, but it'll be a very different thing. And Tim Cook will have to make the case the way Steve Jobs did with the iPad that this exists underneath the phone category.
You're absolutely right, Renee. It seems like Apple might kind of they might be self-aware of the expectations of releasing something that shocks the world, and instead may go the exact opposite direction and drill down onto that health vertical and say, no, this isn't something for everyone, but if you are into health and the quantified self, and it, then this is maybe for you.
We know it'll lead us to have that because they've hired the guy
from Nike.
Right.
And a bunch of health scientists who did sensor work.
Right.
Hired.
I do feel like we're in a position now with wearable computing, much as we were before the iPhone came out, where the idea was persuasive. You know, the idea of wearable computing is very exciting, has been for years.
And persistent as well.
It just won't go away. And I do believe, I think it's going to be a huge category, but it remains for somebody, and I don't know if it's going to be Apple, but it remains for somebody to solve this, right?
Well, look at the iPhone compared to the iPhone 5, Leo, and the original iPad compared to the iPad Mini. The first one is usually clunkier and thicker, and it still was
a breakthrough, though. The iPhone,
yes, absolutely.
I mean, I waited in line 6 hours for that first iPhone. It was quantifiably better than anything that had come before it. It did change the
world. Lot of technology.
Yeah. And so it would need to do something like that if Apple is to be the one that reinvents this.
You know, much like the Fitbit, the Fitbit is a wonderful product, but it is a product that becomes self-evident once you've used it. The iPhone is something, even the iPad, and
you
most of
you
us
wanted Apple, it.
Right, you see it and you know what it does, right?
Yeah.
But a Fitbit, you kind of have to use for a month or two before you go, ah, light bulb, I see why this is wonderful. And I think that might be the Apple is aware of that with a quantified self product.
It's also a different world. I mean, you've got Google Glass, you've got some very credible competition. I don't know if Apple is the leader in the horse race at this point.
The iPhone, Leo, we had Trios or Blackberries before that, and the original iPhone was nowhere near as feature complete, but Steve Jobs showed inertial scrolling and the bounce back and pinch to zoom. It wasn't as functional, but he made the experience look so compelling.
Right.
Same with the iPad. He sat there and browsed the web and used, Mike Mattis's little photo interface where you could peek inside photos, and that was appealing to not, geeks like, certainly to geeks like us, but to the mainstream people. When I went to the iPad 2 lineup, I saw all my old high school teachers there. It was 90% people 10 or 20 years older than me, and that's the people that they called to.
Yeah,
that's not the Galaxy Gear market.
Right. It may not be feature complete, but it's the features you want, and those features are very easy for the mainstream to say, I definitely want that, and quantified self might just take a while.
That's an interesting idea. I'm bullish on it. In fact, I think we're looking at doing a show on mobile computing plus wearables, because I really feel like that's where all the excitement's going to be over the next few years.
What's next?
But I'm waiting, right? Nobody's cracked that yet. And I don't know if Apple has the mojo to do it or not.
But the nice thing is what you said, Leo, is that now, Google's at least is absolutely as interesting a company as Apple right now. And the dynamic between them and who knows what young upstart or startup company or other technology company will come out of nowhere. And Apple doesn't have to do it alone. There's a better chance for it happening because there's more competitive companies.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break and talk about Apple because we've got a little bit of a party coming up on Tuesday. And we'll Renee Ritchie's got the best connections in the business about what's coming from Apple. I got Kit Kat all over myself now. Get rid of this thing. I kill you, Google. I kill you. Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. I tell you, when I spilled water 2 weeks ago on this computer, I got a little scared, but I realized I don't have to worry. And it's kind of nice. I haven't had to worry in a long time because I don't have to worry about my stuff being backed up. It's up there. It's in the cloud thanks to Carbonite Online Backup. $59.99 a year to back up everything on a single computer. Great for a laptop, Mac or PC. Laptops get lost. Hard drives die. Here's the deal. Automatic. You don't have to think about it. Secure. Your files are encrypted and backed up safely off-site. That's nice in this day and age. It's very affordable. Less than $5 a month per computer. And if you're a small business, you really ought to check out the small business solutions for Carbonite. Just like the individual solution, it's a single yearly rate for as much data as you have. Easy file recovery. It'll back up external hard drives. They've got a cool thing for the home premier and up. They have a courier recovery service. They'll bring you a hard drive. If you're, and this for a small business is great. If you've been using Carbonite, it's been backing up. You got your accounts receivable, your client list, all that important stuff. If there's a fire, they literally will courier you your backup on a hard drive. So you're backing up and running. I love Carbonite. I want you to try it right now for free. No credit card needed. Just use our offer code TWIT. You'll get 2 months free with purchase if you do that. Carbonite.com. Spend more time making memories than backing them up. I love that idea. I'm tempted to just to try it. Oh, my hard drive died. Here's your hard drive. Love that. September 10th. You didn't get an invite. Andy Iannacco did. It's a small venue.
150 people.
The last time I was at Apple's town hall, and this will tell you how long it's been since they've used it, was the big iPod sock announcement. And the iPod.
They used it for iPhone 4, the iPhone 4S event,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, I wasn't invited to those. No.
Yeah.
So it's very tight. So a lot of people aren't invited. So you don't have to feel bad.
Always a bridesmaid, Leo.
We will be covering it. Well, it starts 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 1 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. Our coverage will begin a little bit before. We're going to have Scott Bourne, the original iPhone fanatic, will join us, along with Chris Breen from Macworld, Sarah, and Tom and I. Our live coverage. We don't know yet. Do we know if Apple's streaming it?
We don't. They did not stream the last event at Town Hall, but they've been streaming more events recently.
Right. Seems like this would be a good candidate since it is such a small venue. We know it will be iPhone, Renee?
Yes.
No question.
It will be an iPhone event.
You've got the invitation behind you. What did it say?
Something to brighten your day.
Something to brighten your day.
Yes.
What could that be?
I have it on good authority that the graphics department, after they put out these invitations, sits back, grabs an adult beverage, and laughs at the internet trying to suss out what they mean.
What does it mean? What does it mean? Oh, my God. They're going to have two LED flashes on the iPhone 5.
The iPhone's going to be a circular display.
Are they talking about iOS 7, I would guess, right?
Well, they use dots at WWDC as well. It's a motif they've been... I mean, a couple iPad events ago, they used a bunch of dots as well. It's something that they like visually.
Maybe they're talking about the brand new gold phone.
That would be nice. And the fingerprint reader that's coming with it.
All right. Let's talk about this. I'm sorry. I got to finish my Kit Kat.
Google won. They can't.
It's
you can't
right.
Can't stop eating them. Fingerprint reader on the face of it's exciting. In fact, Mike Elgin months ago, credit to Mike, was one of the first to report a fingerprint reader. Everybody go, in fact, you, Renee, and Andy, and I sat here saying, no, they'll never do that. We knew Apple had bought Authentec last year for billions of dollars. So they had the technology, they owned it. Mike Elgin speculated if they'd put it in the iPhone, it would be a revolution for authentication. And authentication is critical to online payments, so payments of any kind. Yeah. If I'm going to give you a charge card, the most important part of that transaction is that you know I am who I say I am, that it's my card. And you know what? If you're buying things online, that you are who you say you are. If both ends are securely and accurately authenticated, it makes online currency transactions friction-free. But currently, there is no way to really do that. There's a certain amount of trust that's involved in using a credit card. If Apple could get a reliable, and it would have to be very reliable, right? Accurate fingerprint sensor on that phone that could transform things. So that's was Mike's contention. But I have to say, I'm going to sound like Mr. Apple Knockers here. I think that was Marilyn Monroe's first film, actually. But that's another story, another kind. But I'm just pointing out that it happens. Every company does it, where they come out with something that is potentially huge. But execution lacks, and it's just another thing.
You can say Siri, Leo. It's okay.
Siri is a very good example.
Yeah.
If this thing isn't exactly, if it doesn't really, if on the screen it says, put your finger on here or give us your PIN to unlock, that's not it.
Well, you need the PIN, for example, if you want to give your phone to Lisa and she doesn't have your thumbprint. So you always need a back door for people who aren't you using your device.
But it has to be 100% reliable, secure, and dependable. And even if they do that, it also has to have the back end. Merchants have to support it. They have to take a passbook and make it you know, have money in it. There's no money in it right now. It's just Fandango tickets and things. Starbucks.
My understanding is that, well, Passbook was written, I think it's called Passbook Kit or something, where it's highly abstracted. So, you know, this iOS 7, Apple's adding some things to it. Eventually, they could add NFC or they could add the fingerprint reader. It's very easy for them to do that because they built it in a smart way. What I've heard so far is that they're testing it with a ton of people because it's not a trivial problem. People really do hold their phones differently. People have different sized fingers and they left-handed or right-handed, and there's all sorts of things. And they could either make it very secure where it requires a high level of certainty to unlock your device, in which case it will have false negatives, or they could make it much laxer. They'd need fewer points of identification, right. In which case it might
let
someone into it shouldn't, but it won't. Well, I think Apple is usually consumer-focused, so if you start getting frustrated you can't open their phone, that's bad. If a theoretical one out of a million other people could open it, that's probably less of a problem where you're concerned. And for people who are really security-conscious, they could probably say you need a thumbprint and your PIN code, so it's something you are and something you know, and then you've got two-factor at least working for you.
Dr. Mom, one of our regular chatters who's a physician, says that they use fingerprint readers in the hospital to unlock narcotics. And she says, even there, they're only about 75% reliable.
And that's an interesting, I mean, that's the flip side of this where people might get upset about it is that it establishes your identity in a good and a bad way. Because if you unlock that cabinet and get the narcotics, they know it's you. There's no deniability there. And if you've got a fingerprint on your transaction or your email and that's ever an issue, you've got no excuse that, oh, my friend downloaded that MP3 file.
You know, what it reminds me, what I'm concerned about is, you know, many Android devices have face unlocking where, you know, this was a cool thing for Samsung to show off. You seize your face and then it unlocks it. Google showed it with 4.2, I think. Nobody uses it.
No.
It's ridiculous.
You can pull it with a photo.
Yeah, well, it's just dumb. It's not reliable enough to count on it. It doesn't just work. It takes a long time. It's so much easier to enter in a PIN. That it just doesn't make any sense. So my question is this going to be a great thing? And Apple's done this in the past. That, you know, everybody goes, wow, that's neat, and nobody uses it. Or could this really be a significant...
The degree to which this is a gimmick versus something that is deeply integrated across the platform. And all of the negatives aside, this is something that if it permeates the Apple environment within the next, let's say, two or three iterations of iOS devices, it is something that really does have the potential to change the landscape entirely. All of these other hangups, however, really increase the likelihood that this is a gimmick like Siri was.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard, and I know other people have heard, that Apple has been testing it in a wide range of things, and it could just unlock the device. That might be it this time, but it could also become your Apple ID. So instead of putting in your iTunes password, you can just authenticate with your thumbprint, which is entering passcodes on mobile sucks. It doesn't matter what platform you're on. You can't put in a secure platform. Horrible. And then, you know, the next step is integrating it with Passbook. But it's like, you know, Ford and cars will tell you that people are adverse to change and adverse to technology, and you have to walk them through things slowly. You know, they just don't want the car to drive on its own the first day. So it could be that Apple slowly rolls out features over the course of the next few software updates.
Yeah, and limiting it also limits consumer expectation while also allowing consumer imagination to flourish, right? If it is something that just unlocks your phone or replaces a password in just your iTunes and App Store transactions, then that's something where people are more forgiving with failures and also can see the future where it is in an improved device. But if this is something that Apple really presses as the differentiating feature between this and the 5, which it seems like they will, this really could fall into novelty, like, okay, cutesy territory.
Right.
It's not all bad because all they need is that demo. Like, you buy your new iPhone, you go and show your friends, look, it's got a thumbprint reader. You really don't care that it works. You care that you have something cool to show your friend. And Apple has the Santa Claus commercial where Scrooge can't get into your iPhone, but boy, Santa can unlock it, get the Christmas list, and save Christmas. And that's all they really need is that one feature to show off a visually not very different phone and that Christmas commercial, and that's their holiday season.
Yeah.
And even as poorly as Siri worked 2 years ago, it was exactly what you're saying. It was that feature that let you say, this is what differentiates my 4S from your very similar 4. And poor working as Siri was, it really helped drive interest in that product.
Is there a bingo chart that we could keep for Tuesday watching? What are we watching for? What are we looking for? What things will tell us oh, this is a big deal or not a big deal. Partnerships?
I mean, it's being held in Cupertino, so it's not going to be, it's not small. The iPhone 6 event. Yeah, it's a small event. It's going to be an internal upgrade. It'll have a much better chipset, much better digital signal processor. It'll have the gold and maybe the steel coloring as well. So at least people will, because one of the big problems with the S lines is people got upset that no one could tell you had the new iPhone. So gold and maybe steel would at least let your friends know that you have the new iPhone. And it's a hugely popular color. So it's an incremental update, but you know Apple doesn't intend for anybody but us geeks to buy phones year after year anyway. It's mostly for people on a 4S or a 4 still.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, and that's you know what's most interesting. I know that we've probably been saying this a lot lately, but what's most interesting is you remember 3 years ago with the discovery of the iPhone 4, and that even then leaks were something that happened. You know, they were few and far between, and the degree to which this is. Last year, maybe, but this year is really the year where we know so much about this product before it's announced, you know, and that really the change in how Apple controls its, you know, the entire chain has really changed a lot, and it's not being discussed very much.
Will there be one more thing? Will there be a surprise at all?
No.
That we didn't hear about. I mean, the fingerprint reader could have been a surprise, but they ended up putting it in the code for iOS 7. So
I gave that one away. Right. And of course, as you point out, Dan, because they can't control China, they can't control the manufacturing, and they need to make these all ahead of time.
We would know if there was the surprise may be a November or October event like we've seen in the last, you know, occasionally in the last couple of years. I think the time we would see an iWatch would mostly be in the spring where they can test out products, right? But no, there is no, you know, we would have indications. There would be signals within the noise here. And it seems like it'll be a fun event, but nothing surprising.
What about the rumors that there would be a new Apple TV? Those have been thoroughly debunked by now, yes?
What's your definition of a new app? I mean, Apple TV is getting, that's one of the things, the problems with the news cycles. Apple TV is getting iOS 7. They don't call it that, but it gets whatever the new software built for other iOS devices is. And that'll
really?
Come with
I
iTunes Radio. They call it something dumb. It has two different OS names. Neither of them are the proper OS name. I don't know why they do that, but whenever a new beta comes out for the phone or the iPad, that same beta comes out for the Apple TV. And when the release comes out within a few days, the Apple TV is updated to the same basic structure of iOS. And that's to allow for compatibility and features like AirPlay and AirPlay mirroring to work. So it'll get a new OS, it'll get iTunes Radio, and it'll get some other stuff.
You know, one thing I could see, we haven't discussed this very, very much, but one thing I could see that is a surprise could be plastic back iPod Touch. You know, we kind of look at the shrinking iPod market and particularly the price of that device. You know, that's an entry level device for a lot of people who don't want to get tied down to a contract. And it seems very obvious that a touch with a plastic back is something that is, you know, it's a no brainer. It would make the product cheaper and easier to access.
And the iPod sales are tanking. I mean, season after season. Last year, Apple did iPods the same time they did the iPhones, and we've had very little leaks about anything new in the iPod space. And it could be that they're getting so small that the traditional gateway drug to the App Store and to iOS is going to be replaced with the iPhone 5C. And one of the things we don't know, because Apple doesn't have to get it out to partners that early, is what the price tag on that will be. Because if it's $450, which is one of the rumors, that's pretty close to Apple's subsidy. So could it be $0 in subsidy markets? Does Apple want to maintain perception of value, make it $40 or $100? And then does all those trade-ins and refurbs go even below that in cost in Latin America and Africa and countries like that, and Apple starts to have a range of pricing, and especially in emerging markets. So there's a lot of small things that are still interesting.
When does Apple stop making the iPod?
Never.
Never?
Depends which one.
They'll still make a touch, right? Because that's just the phone without.
Right.
Yeah. It's like whether the Classic survives 128 gigabyte, you know, iOS devices will be interesting to see.
Yeah. Do people still buy those?
It
feels like buying a fax machine.
160 gigs, Leo. All your music in your pocket.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't even fit all my music. and then what about this 17-watt adapter? Apparently Apple's making the regular adapter for an iPad is 10 watts. 17 is not enough for a laptop. What is a 17-watt adapter doing in Apple's lineup?
They'll Apple probably TV? Be new iPads in October. Yeah,
13-inch iPad?
Yeah, that's probably an October thing more than a September thing.
Anything else to say about Tuesday? You'll be we'll get you on MacBreak Weekly right after the announcement.
Absolutely.
Do Kit Kats give you hiccups? I think they do.
Oh, the chat room is asking, new Macs are probably not at this event either. Apple has, they have iPods, iPhones, iPads, and Mac product lines. And last year, iPads and Macs were both in October. It sounds like Mavericks will be in October. Haswell chips still aren't plentiful at that, you know, product range. So right. Macs are probably going to be a October thing.
Yeah, we want Haswell MacBooks.
Yeah, MacBooks, iPad, MacBook, Mac Minis.
This is a Haswell Air. And I do love that. And you know, the more important thing that they did, which didn't get enough attention, and I'd love to see this in the MacBook Pros, and I'm sure we will, is they moved the SSD off the SATA bus and put it on PCI Express. Mm-hmm. And this is the fastest hard drive I've ever seen. And that by itself, forget anything else. I mean, 12-hour battery life in that make this very desirable. But it drives me crazy that it's not a Retina display.
I have the same one, Leo, and the battery life is amazing.
It's amazing.
The screen and the typing is nowhere nearly as good as it is on my MacBook, my Retina MacBook Pro, so I keep going back.
It's frustrating. If they're so close.
Soon.
Soon. Next month, maybe.
Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. Are you an audiobook listener? You ought to be.
Get it? Audible, ought to be.
Okay, forget I said that. This is a great place to go. 150,000 titles. Every time I go to the Audible page, though, I see more books that I want to buy. John Scalzi's Hugo Award winner, Red Shirts, narrated by Will Wheaton. If you like sci-fi, best, according to the Hugo Awards, best sci-fi novel of the year. Got to put that in my, add that to my cart. And then after you do that, there's this new book about J.D. Salinger that'll go along with a new documentary about J.D. Salinger that's coming out. I can't wait to see that. Holy camoly. What do you pick? Well, here's the deal. You're going to get two books, so you can pick two. If you go to audible.com/twit2, that'll set you up for the Platinum account. That's two books or two credits a month. Most books are a single credit. Are you watching that new Netflix show, Orange is the New Black? I love it. This is the novel, not novel, memoir that inspired it, Piper Kerman's, because it's a true story. You could read that. I got a million of them. Audible is just a wonderful place to find great fiction, nonfiction, history. I listen to a lot of books about technology. Two books, yours, free. And by the way, with this subscription, you also get the daily edition of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times read to you, which is great. Go to audible.com/twit2. Sign up today. Get two books absolutely free. You pay nothing for the first 30 days. Cancel any time in the first 30 days. Those books will be yours to keep. I read a lot of political stuff, too. There's Under Fire, the Untold Story of the Attack at Benghazi. That sounds interesting. This new first novel by the 21-year-old Samantha Shannon is getting a lot of attention. The Bone Season. Did you read that, Chad?
Yeah, I'm over halfway through. This is such a good book.
She's 21. It's going to be a 7-book series.
It's funny because I'm right at the point in the book where either it could start wrapping up to be like the end of the book and the end of the series, or like you could set up for the rest of the 7 books.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah. I'm just like, I so hope that this is a multi-book
Sounds
series.
Good. The year is 2059, and Paige Mahoney is a clairvoyant living in a dystopian London.
The world that she creates is so good. There's these clairvoyant people. There's different levels of clairvoyance. There's card readers. There's like, it's such a great book.
Doesn't it make you mad that a 21-year-old wrote
Yes, it really does. It really does.
Inspiring, Leo. It's inspiring.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, inspiring. That's it. Yeah, it's inspiring.
It literally makes me want to keep cleaning my apartment so that I can just do something
Start
while listening
writing.
To audiobooks.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what's great about Audible. You drive around the block an extra time. You sit in the driveway mm-hmm. with the engine running. Mm-hmm. You do an extra half hour on the treadmill. I'm going to add this one to my cart, too.
It is so good.
Audible.com. Really? You really liked it?
I'm still loving it. And it's about 14 hours, actually around 15 hours. And every second of it is so, so good.
Oh, I can't wait.
And it's really fast-paced. It's not super slow, and you get right into the action.
Audible.com/twit2. I'm looking for books to take. I'm taking vacation. And this will be one more twit with me next weekend, and then Sarah Lane's going to take twit in 2 weeks, Tom Merritt's going to take twit in 3 weeks, and Father Robert Ballester's going to take twit in 4 weeks. I'm going to be gone for 3 twits. But, hey, we got a deep bench now. I'm really pleased. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a great time. So, I'm stocking up on books, downloading all my music and my books to my phone and stuff like that. You do the same. Audible.com/twit2. Hey, let's see. This would be a good time. Yes, I got to go get some more Kit Kat bars. So let's see what you missed, if you missed this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit, Twit Live Specials.
It's the true companion for your note, making sure you never
miss your note. It's really isolated to the note. That's a disappointment.
That's awful.
There's a lot of people with S3s and S4s that would probably buy right into this.
Windows Weekly.
I don't know. You look at the world of today, and it's hard not to say Android has done to iOS what Windows did to the Mac. Why isn't Microsoft doing that?
Well, Microsoft's doing the Apple thing. In fact, more and more, it looks like Microsoft's restructuring is similar.
Microsoft has never succeeded at being Apple, Leo. That's the problem.
Twit Live Specials.
We wanted to take it up a notch, and we've done that with our holographic virtual set. It allows you to take a panoramic picture, and then you can take that image and create a virtual set. And I think we've got Leo Laporte.
What? Hey, Kiki, how are you?
Well.
Wait a minute, she's over there.
Twit. Put down the keg and tap the twit.
Awesome. You're applauding because I had 5 Kit Kat bars in that time. It was a good week, wasn't it? You and NSFW had a great rap group, Turquoise Jeep. We'll have that in the next, publish that in Tuesday. That'll be awesome. Let's see what Tom Merritt has coming up in the week ahead, Tom.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Monday, Cloud Beat Conference kicks off in San Francisco. Tuesday, September 10th, Intel IDF 13. Anything else going on? Oh, right. Apple has their big announcement. Probably going to get new iPhones and good-looking stuff, maybe some Retina MacBook Pros. Wednesday, September 11th is Patriot Day. Thursday, September 12th, Google is removing video responses on YouTube, so don't do any after that. LinkedIn opens to 13-year-olds and older. GeekWire Summit kicks off in Seattle. Also kicking off Thursday, September 12th, Derek, starring Ricky Gervais, begins streaming on Netflix. Friday, September 13th, Aereo comes to Chicago. And it's the anniversary of the launch of Super Mario Brothers in 1985.
Ooh.
That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Tom Merritt. Tom Merritt and the TNT crew every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv for your daily dose of tech news. So what is that? They're killing video. Chad Johnson, my producer, also hosts our show on YouTube, This Week in YouTube. YouTube's killing video responses.
Yeah, so
that seems like a big part of YouTube.
It really was. So back in the day, you know, vloggers would upload a video, and then you could make a video in response to that video, and it would show up underneath. And
right.
You could easily...
It's like a comment, but it's a little more than that.
Right, and so they're getting rid of it. Which is really, I mean, if anything else has been sort of a outline of where they want to go in the future, they don't like this whole social network stuff that's going on YouTube.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's really kind of disappointing because that's how I got into YouTube is from making my own video responses and it's completely gone. And they've been downplaying it for over 2 years now. They've been moving it lower and lower on the page. You have to go to a separate little tab to see them.
Yeah, and then they say, oh, we're killing it because we have a 0.0004 click-through rate.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you hit it.
Exactly.
I think you're right. I think this is more of YouTube trying to be professional.
Yeah.
But that's not what people want. I think that's a mistake.
And truly, I hope that someone else comes up with a better product.
Yeah, is that
they say, you know what? If you want to socially make videos together, here's what you should use.
But you know, much like RSS, you know, Google saw this rush to RSS in the mid-2000s and then built Reader and then promptly abandoned Reader. This reminds me of, you know, remember Loic's company, Proto Comments was Seismic and companies like 12 Seconds that really did kind of help Google make space for this type of video comment only to see them kill it.
Yeah, of course, Seismic went out of business. So did 12. I don't think 12 Seconds is still around. Nevertheless, Vine is huge.
Right.
12 seconds was just too long. We want 6 seconds.
That's the key.
I still don't understand the Vine thing. I don't.
The kids love it, Leo.
The kids. It's all about the kids. Big story. We're going to talk about it on Wednesday. I had Steve Gibson talking about it on the radio show. More of the Snowden leaks are coming out. And now this most recent story is essentially that the National Security Agency has done a huge amount to bypass privacy on the web, to undermine encryption. They dedicate, according to the story, as much as $250 million a year of their secret budget to subverting companies like Microsoft. They literally are planting agents within these companies to put backdoors in their encryption. They've subverted the National Institute for Standards and Technology, which is a standards body in the United States that, among other things, protect, you know, create standards for government encryption. It seems as if we've got an out of control surveillance state. What is your, you know, you're not a American, Renee. Yep. You're in Montreal. From outside of the U.S., what is your take? What do you see going on here? And my real concern, and I think this is Bruce Schneier and others have raised this. My real concern is that the United States is, in effect, undermining the basis of the internet. And it's making United States products, if nothing else, if you're not worried about privacy, it means that no nation outside the United States should even consider a United States product. The U.S. government told us last year, don't buy phones from Huawei and ZTE because they're made by the Chinese government, in effect, and they're spying on us. Well, we're doing the same thing.
It's interesting to me because exactly what you say, there are a lot of states in which you live under the presumption of surveillance. A lot of people in England say their laws are written in such a way that this is perfectly legal and they don't understand the outcry in North America. We have CSIS in Canada, and I believe part of their purview is to is domestic surveillance. So there's a lot of countries where you can barely do anything without the oversight of the government. But the difference in the United States is that theoretically this should not be possible. And if agencies want to do this, they should go and pass the prerequisite laws required to make this legal and allow people to, or the Congress and the Senate, to vote on those laws. And if it's not legal, they shouldn't be allowed to do it. I mean, they should have to go and make their case in a free society to a republic society and make it legal and then go ahead and do it. But what it does is exactly what you said about China. You can't have confidence in buying a Chinese device because you found spyware on the photography frame that you bought at the local Costco or whatever it is. And the same thing now is true. I believe that it's so badly broken that I'm just never going to trust any technology company or any technology product ever again, because it's the kind of trust that once broken, you can never get back. If they can lie about spying now, there's no point in them saying we've stopped doing it, because you'll never believe them. And it undermines not only the internet, it undermines your faith in any product you use on any service ever for the rest of time.
Bruce says it undermines the very fabric of the internet. It is doing huge damage. Now, Gibson came on and said, look, a lot of this is essentially link bait from these news agencies. He says, understand what's happening here. And Schneier says this too, the math is still good. Strong encryption has not been cracked. There's no reason to think that the NSA has such supercomputer powers in the basement there that they're able to get through, you know, 2048 or much less 4096-bit, RSA encryption. Strong encryption still works. But the NSA realized before 9/11 and stepped it up after 9/11 that the internet was rapidly going dark for them. And so has created an effort in which they spend $250 million a year, at least, to get around this. And so they talk about a very commonly used telecom program that the NSA placed a backdoor in. I'm presuming it's Skype. You have to presume that any closed source encryption like Microsoft's BitLocker or Apple's File Vault could very well have a backdoor in it. But Steve pointed out, and this is absolutely true, if you're using TrueCrypt or OpenPGP, if you're using an open source solution, you're likely still able to send secure messaging. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I think much of what's happening here is confusing, and it can be perceived as clickbait. But this is an incredibly James Bamford, who you can find his books on Audible, is a security researcher who's come to many of the same conclusions that you have on security now, and that is, what's happened here is far more than simple failings of technology or are the ability of technology. What's very scary about this is policy decisions that led to infiltrations within the technology industry in the late 90s and early 2000s. It is not simply, it's difficult to articulate how important this is without seeming hyperbolic and clickbaity yourself. But this is an incredibly important story, not just because of the technology components, but because of the duplicity involved and the secrecy involved in infiltrating on a human level the entire industry.
From ProPublica, cryptographers have long suspected that the NSA planted vulnerabilities in a standard adopted in 2006 by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the U.S. Encryption Standards Body, and later by IOS, which has 163 countries as members. Classified NSA memos appear to confirm that the fatal weakness discovered by Microsoft cryptographers, by the way, in 2007, was engineered by the agency. They're actually subverting NIST. The NSA wrote the standard and aggressively pushed it on the international group, privately calling the effort in these memos, quote, a challenge in finesse. They created the standard.
There's two scary things about this is not only that they created backdoors, there's no guarantee that other people haven't found them and used them. I mean, just because the NSA is using them doesn't mean people that you'd be much more worried about than the NSA aren't using them. And also they store the stuff. So while the strong encryption is good now, who knows how good it'll be in 5 years with the advance of the computers or 10 years. Yep. But I do think that it's nice in America, at least, that there's a debate about this stuff going on, because in a lot of countries, it's just assumed or your government is legally allowed to do this thing and there's no dialogue going on about it, or people are just not aware of it. About it. And at least here, and I don't know if it's clickbaity or not, the level of awareness to a culture that usually doesn't care about anything because privacy is, they'd rather have convenience than privacy. I'm really glad the debate at least is going on.
Well, and we are living through a moment where we are learning incrementally, almost week by week, we are learning things that either confirm things that we thought in the past or simply are. I mean, some of the comments in here were that when the NSA showed this to their counterparts in Britain, that they were, quote unquote, gobsmacked by this, particularly the ability to decrypt things from the past. And this is important because if you think of you know, the degree to which the and I'm very nonpartisan, but you think of the degree to which the Bradley Manning files really set off a firestorm because of the cables and what was revealed in those cables. That was a very small amount of documents compared to what we are now able to access. This is akin to unlocking the past. We are able to see many of the secrets that were kept in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And that really does inform our policy positions going forward with our allies and our enemies.
Well, and even more securing, even more scary, we've been assuming that SSL is secure.
Yeah.
And it looks like Steve had hypothesized this on Security Now, that the agency was looking for SSL certificates from companies like Google. Should they be able to get those certificates, they'd be able to unencrypt all SSL traffic to and from Google. And apparently they have been doing exactly that. Now, interestingly, one of Google's responses is to encrypt traffic going from server to server in Google. They're trying to foil this. And what's interesting, I'd be very interested to see if this is seen as an unpatriotic move by some, to thwart the NSA spying. Is that to thwart our own interests, national interests? I believe we have the right to privacy from these police agencies. And I also believe, and I think this is very important, that once a state becomes a surveillance state, there's no going backward.
You don't go back.
Yeah. V for vendetta.
It's almost always the first step toward a totalitarian government. We are able to have this conversation, thank God, now without worrying about people banging down our doors. But we're moving in the very much the wrong direction. If you want to do something about this, Representative Rush Holt, who is a Democrat from New Jersey in the House of Representatives, has introduced a bill called the Surveillance State Repeal Act. I think good timing. It would repeal the Patriot Act and the FISA Amendments Act. I don't know if this thing has a chance in hell. Probably not when you have a Congress. It's apparently in the back pocket of the NSA. But I think you should write your member of Congress. One thing we know that they do care about is their constituency. And if you write them and say, please support the Surveillance State Repeal Act, if enough people write to them, I think they start to pay attention to this. This is really scary.
SeaTech Astronomy.
Say again?
SeaTech Astronomy. That was that Robert Redford movie, Sneakers, when there was no more secrets left.
Oh,
yeah.
So I would encourage people who care about this enough to want to know more about the technology to watch Wednesday on security. Now, Steve is going to go into great detail about, based on this information, what he believes the NSA can and cannot do. I gather from him that PGP and open open source solutions like OpenPGP and TrueCrypt are still reliable.
Unless the NSA plants a guy saying, yeah, they're reliable. Yeah. So that's the problem with
It's open source, though, right? I mean, that's the beauty of open source.
Yeah, people say that, Leo, but how many people are, I'm not a Steve Gibson level engineer, so
no, most people can't. Right?
Yeah, Linux is great because you can hack the kernel if you want. I can't. I can't verify PGP. I have to take someone's word for it, and then it comes down to the trust of the person who gave that word.
I think there are sufficient people in the open source community to look at this code, and to vet it. I do believe it is secure and safe. This is a big community of people who feel very strongly. I think that privacy is important. And I think it would be difficult to – it'd be more than difficult, impossible to get a backdoor into open source encryption. And that's the key. By the way, Rush Holt is a physicist. So he's somebody in Congress who actually understands all of this stuff. Wow. He says that the NSA is overreaching and could hurt American interests. And this is the way to attack it, in Congress anyway. Including the reputations of American companies whose products the agencies may have altered or influenced. Holt says, we pay them to spy, but if in the process they degrade the security of the encryption we all use, it's a net national disservice.
And I think believe they're also charged with protecting our security of our communications.
Well, that's the ironic part of it, is the NSA really has two missions. One is to keep us, to keep our security up, to make sure we are protected, as well as to find terrorists and so forth. There's widespread... Dan Kaminsky, who's a great security researcher, a great hacker, he said there's widespread disappointment among internet security experts. This has been the stuff of wild-eyed accusations for years. A lot of people are heartbroken to find out it's not just wild-eyed accusations. Sasha Meinrath, who's director of the Open Technology Institute, a research group in Washington, said the reports were a startling indication the U.S. has been a remarkably irresponsible steward of the internet.
This is stuff that I've been covering the United Nations and politics for the last 7 years, and I'm generally, I've had all partisanship beaten out of me, and I'm not inclined to wear a tinfoil hat. Yet this is stuff, if you're interested in this, follow @JackRice on Twitter. He's a colleague, former colleague of mine who was in the CIA for years. And Jack generally is able to get rid of the FUD and get down to the brass tacks on issues. And this is the kind of stuff that is as close to tinfoil hat reality as I can remember seeing in politics and government. It is legitimately frightening.
Yeah, sad that we've gotten to that point.
But it's not too late.
It's not too late. Please write your member of Congress. Go to EFF.org. They always have great political action information, who to write to, how to write to them, how to make it work. At this point, we ought to be pretty damn glad that Edward Snowden did leak what he leaked, because, the more we learn about this, the worse it's sounding. Moving on. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a new Kindle, the Paperwhite. Shipping September 30th. I don't know. Amazon should do events. I think Jeff Bezos on stage could have some fun.
He did. He did the Kindle HD event.
That's right. Yeah. Why didn't they do an event for this? Well, anyway, Amazon also, and then people could ask him what he's going to do with the Washington Post. Jessica Lesson writes that Amazon looks to be offering a free smartphone, even if you're not buying, not even subsidized, just free. We'll talk about the new Yahoo logo and more. GoToMeeting from HD Faces, our sponsor today. The folks at Citrix have created the best way to meet online. GoToMeeting, you've probably heard about it. It's been around for some time. Just gets better and better. One of the beauties of GoToMeeting is, every time you start a meeting, you'll get new features, new benefits. Meetings, I hate to admit it, are an essential way to getting things done. It's how ideas get shared, problems get solved. You cut through the bureaucracy and you get things done. Creative solutions. It's hard with the team spread out. Everybody's in different locations. We're all global now. We use GoToMeeting with HD Faces a lot, not just to present to clients, but to meet with colleagues. I know teams that keep GoToMeeting running all day. No matter where you're located, GoToMeeting allows you to share the same screen, making it easier to be on the same page. And with HD Faces, you see the other people you're meeting with. You need crystal clear HD video. What's cool is you can do this even on an iPad or an iPhone. In fact, you could present from an iPad. They'll see your picture. It's really cool. I want you to try it free. 30 days free. GoToMeeting.com. Click that orange try it free button there and enter our offer code TWIT for 30 days free. GoToMeeting.com. So, let's see. Paper White, have you anybody seen anything, played with it? What is new on the new Kindle paper? I like the first Paper White. It had a very nice glowing backlight that made it very legible. And unlike other Kindles, you could actually use it in the dark. Apparently, improved touchscreen, faster processor. Integration with Goodreads. Amazon purchased that. They now own both Shelfari and Goodreads, both of the big social reading networks. And there's a kid-friendly mode called Free Time.
Yep.
I don't know what that does exactly.
I think that's similar to the Kindle Fire HD, where you can give a kid a specific amount of time that they can use things on the device.
Hey, I want my kid to read as much as he wants.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Especially on a paper white.
You're reading too much, Charlie. Start playing more video games. $119 with advertisements, $139 without advertisements, available September 30th. So I like this story. I don't know, you know, Jessica Lesson, who used to work at the Wall Street Journal and is apparently on her way to a new enterprise, has her blog right now, jessicalesson.com. She and Amira Afradi are writing some pretty good stuff. Initially claimed that they were going to do a free phone. Amazon's now saying, no, we're not going to do a free phone. Is it? But this is the challenge that Apple faces. Companies like Amazon and Google don't need to make money on the hardware, do they?
The interesting thing is that Microsoft disrupted the entire industry with really cheap software a long time ago. And now Google's come in and they did free services because their business does not depend on services revenue. And, you know, the same way Apple devalued software on the App Store so that it was complementary and they could sell more iPhones and iPads, Google and Amazon are devaluing hardware, which is dangerous for Apple because that's how Apple makes all their money. And after cheap, the next step is free. And that's really interesting because a company like Apple can't go there, but Google and Amazon theoretically could. And it's not really a disruption because, you know, things go in cycles and you can compete with free by having better, but it's a dangerous territory because very few other companies can afford. I mean, it's destroyed Microsoft's mobile business, Google's model. Yep.
There you go. Now, this was a big story all week. Everybody was talking about this, and Amazon didn't comment initially. But today, they said, no, we are not going to launch a smartphone this year. And if we did, it would not be free. So,
yeah, they might as well have tacked on a nope, not yet to the end of that.
Is that what it is, really? Not yet.
It sounds like it. And I think for all the reasons that Renee pointed out, this is, you know, we've seen this erosion in the cost, or at least the perceived cost of hardware. And Amazon is I think, dying to go all in with a free or very low cost device to acquire that market.
Right.
And the problem with Amazon that Google doesn't have is that Amazon can't put devices in many countries because they count on content.
Rights. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't have. I mean, Apple was super lucky that iTunes was there with cash registers everywhere when they launched the App Store. Right. Amazon's got five countries with the Kindle Fire, and there's no way they're going to go easily into China. Google can't even, you know, do a lot of services in China. I mean, there is some protection, but in countries like America, it's a very interesting model.
I actually see that as being one of the huge selling points and maybe the buried lead of the Kindle, the Paperwhite and the Kindle readers themselves. Although it's not a sexy device, these standalone single-purpose devices really can get so cheap that they allow Amazon into these other markets where, you know, a mobile device or a tablet, you know, a phone and a tablet are perceived so differently than a dedicated reading device.
You know who could and should offer free phones worldwide, these companies that are doing online payments, they've become, in Africa, I can't remember the name, I never remember the name of the company, but these companies really are how people get banking done.
Yeah.
And make money. And they could easily put a phone in people's hand, in everybody's hands for free. M-Pesa, too, that's it, M-Pesa. Huge company.
What was interesting, too, there, Leo, is that if you remember the joke from last week where Amazon said no comment, the story about them saying no comment, this time they didn't say no comment, which I think is interesting in and of itself.
Yeah, and by the way, this year has only got 3 months left or 4 months left. It's not exactly, not this year is not exactly a blanket denial. Well, maybe in the spring. Who knows? I don't know.
And Facebook is still looming with a Facebook phone. I mean, there's so many companies that could do so many interesting things in the phone market.
They don't need to make money on the hardware.
Yeah.
You got to love Marissa Meyer, who has used Tumblr, of all things, and now that they own Tumblr, I guess it makes more sense, to get the corporate word out. She has a great blog post on Tumblr on the new Yahoo logo. I can't get really excited about the new Yahoo logo. They try to gin up some excitement by having a different typeface every day for the last 30 days, but this is it, the official Yahoo logo. Wow. It's purple.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
It's a new typeface. But I fell in love with it a little bit more because Marissa Meyer did a great blog post that is the ultimate in geeky blog posts.
Right. She focused on the typography. I mean, that was a huge part of her post.
I love this.
But she didn't. She did everything but. Yeah. I mean, this is offensive to designers, Leo, because she took a bunch of people in and put them in a room and thought that you could manufacture design by committee. If you took the same people and said, code the next version of Yahoo, or people would, you know, they would come out with a useless product, but people would be offended. But design is equally as important to marketing and to development. And this is so badly done.
Should they have hired Paul Rand and just let him, you know, do whatever he wants? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of my early radio mentors, when I was very young trying to be a program director, he said, you know, you hire a music director you like or you fire him and get one that you do. You never program a radio station by committee.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. And the same thing with this. You don't do a logo by committee. Although, you know, I love that she used Tumblr and an old school Tumblr theme to write about.
No, this is like a really old theme. So she writes, on a personal level, I love brands. We knew this about Marissa Meyer. On a personal level, I love brands, logos, color, design, and most of all, Adobe Illustrator. What?
Right.
Yeah. When I read that, I thought whatever's coming is going to be different. I think it's one of the most incredible software packages ever made. I'm not a pro, but I know enough to be dangerous, smiley face. So,
when is she ever?
So you really hate this, don't you? That's interesting.
She makes this big point about mathematical alignment, which a first-year design student has beaten out of their head because you need optical alignment because people have eyes.
It's not math.
Yeah.
Yes.
So she writes, one weekend this summer, I rolled up my sleeves and dove into the trenches with our logo design team. We spent the majority of Saturday and Sunday designing the logo from start to finish. She spent a whole weekend doing it. What are you talking about, Renee? And we had a ton of fun weighing every minute detail. So we didn't want any straight lines in the logo. We preferred letters that had thicker and thinner strokes. Serifs were a big part of the old logo. We felt it was wrong to give them up altogether. So we went for a sans serif font with scallops. Our existing logo felt like the iconic Yahoo Yodel. We wanted to preserve that and do something playful with the O's. The funniest thing is that our last move was to tilt the exclamation point by 9 degrees to add just a bit of whimsy.
9 degrees of whimsy.
I love Kevin Bacon.
.tumblr.com.
So
why don't you get a bunch of people in the room, let them run Yahoo for a weekend.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't think the logo's that big a deal, so I'm not going to slam her on that. I love it that she put this post out. It's particularly geeky. And then she said, here's a fun video created by our amazing intern, Max. It feels like a startup, doesn't it? This is what a startup would write. And they show the whole process and the blueprint. But really, now, did you study design, Renee? It sounds like you did.
Yes, I have a design background.
Okay, there you go. Nothing is bitchier than a designer who's been wronged. So you feel that this demeans the profession.
No, it's the same thing when you get a bad press release, Leo. Like, you know, you get those badly written, and it's such an easy thing to get right that you almost have to go out of your way to get it wrong. And I feel bad for Yahoo as a brand that she let them go out of their way to get this wrong.
Does it matter? Come on. It's just
it's a billion-dollar company. It's purple. It's got a CorelDRAW bevel on it. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
It is kind of a CorelDRAW bevel, isn't it? Yeah, that's a good point. Now I hate it, too. You've convinced me. Oh, well.
I want Yahoo to do well. I mean, we get this knock, Leo, all the time. People say we hate Microsoft or we hate Google or we hate Apple. And we love all these technology companies deeply. That's why we do this. And we get upset because we want them to succeed phenomenally. And, you know, we get bitchy when they disappoint us.
It's like a movie critic. Yes. You know, you don't say movie critics hate movies. No, they love movies so much they get upset when they're bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's really what we are in a way, is we're tech critics. I mentioned CBS and Time Warner made a deal, so good news. If you live in L.A. and Dallas and New York City, you can watch the NFL on CBS. They ended the blackout this week, right in time for the football season. What a shock. I think that CBS just knew. They just said, well, just sit it out. They'll come to their senses. Right. There's no, you know, we got this clock ticking. So nobody's saying what the deal is, but I got to think CBS got what it wanted. And, you know, just all Time Warner has to do is pass it along to the consumers.
Yep. You know, the irony about that is I live in New York, so I've been watching these wonderful ads
they're bitching at each other, aren't they?
Yeah, right. But they've run them. Somebody did great traffic on this and programmed them right next to Amazon Prime under the dome. So like,
you can watch TV on the internet like it was made to be watched.
Right. Exactly. You know, they'll run a spot that says, you know, bring CBS back, bring it back, or just get Amazon Prime and you'll be fine.
Unbelievable. One-fifth. This is a story that's a little close to home for me. According to Quartz, one-fifth. Actually, it's not Quartz, but the Quartz story quotes PageFair, which is a service websites use to measure the extent of ad blocking. 22.7% of people who visit websites block the ads. PageFair estimates that, now remember, this is their business, so they're, you know, there may be some conflict of interest here, but they say one of its typical clients with a 25% blocking rate loses about $500,000 a year due to ad blockers. Website ads are most often blocked when they tend to cater to the technologically savvy. So this is a graph of ad blocking by site category. Number one, gaming sites. One out of three visitors block ads. Technology sites, one out of every four. For travel websites, it's only 5%, one out of 20, because those people don't know how to block.
Why isn't the NSA fighting this, Leo?
Yeah!
Well, what this does not address is very, you know, there's certainly, you know, the integrated type of advertising that you do here on Twit, but this doesn't address native advertising that has been pioneered by BuzzFeed and Huffington Post. And by native advertising, that is the jargony industry, the media and advertising industry term for advertising that looks and sometimes is almost indistinguishable from the content that you will also find on these sites. And in fact, these companies in particular, but others as well, have started creating native advertising for other publishers, for other media publishers. And so although we are seeing this, you know, at scale, of course, the cheap remaindered ads are blocked. Of course, this doesn't address the massive rise of native advertising and how that's influencing the content business as a whole.
No, and that's the big point, is that if you don't like banner ads, you're going to hate the sneaky ads they're going to resort to because you're blocking banner ads.
Right.
You have Robert Downey Jr. eating a Burger King burger on the Iron Man movie, and you don't like it.
It's no accident that Nestle is paying Google for KitKat. This is what happens. I think I might have another little...
That's why we can't have nice ads.
And there are studios. Now, I'm not saying this is bad, and I think this is just fine. It's an evolution. But, you know, at Gawker and Huffington Post and BuzzFeed, these companies have studios that create native advertising. They create... This is product placement on crack. It is advertising that looks and feels and is placed on sites so that it should look and feel just like content.
Right.
That is something that is here to stay and going to become even more... Right. We'll see more of it.
But it's advertisers' fault because they made the obnoxious belly fat ad that you got to block because it's the most disgusting thing you ever saw.
And punch the monkey.
Or punch the monkey. I understand why people block ads.
Yep.
They're horrible.
Right, of course.
It's a transition thing, though. Remember that magazines for a while had ads that people got confused and then they had to put this thing at the top saying this is a paid advertisement for it. Yeah, so the same thing will happen.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think the FTC is going to end up regulating this.
I don't think consumers are aware of it.
It was a huge outcry. Forget the outlet. Was it the Atlantic that had the Scientology post that looked like a real
wasn't
post
that awful?
And it wasn't?
They had to apologize.
Yeah.
It was terrible. It was a pro-Scientology article on the Atlantic, and they had to apologize. It was a terrible thing.
But look, I certainly can't blame media companies for doing what they have to do to sell advertising.
Hey,
I
mean, folks, this crap ain't free, you know? I got to pay for the Kit Kats.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I ran a company based on advertising last year, and so
how
I got
immediately...
How did
that work out for you?
Yeah, right. Not that much.
Well, we have our Talk Mobile is sponsored by BlackBerry, but at the very top it says sponsored by BlackBerry. You know,
right.
So
right. You know, somebody wrote me an email. I can't remember her name or I'd give her credit because I was complaining about this Kit Kat thing. On Windows Weekly, one of our shows, and I mentioned that we had considered studio naming, and she was all upset that I would mention studio naming or consider selling the studio name. And I want to say, you know, this I spend literally millions of my dollars a year in my own money to build the studio, to do all this stuff. It costs a lot of money, and we need to monetize it. You don't get free internet content without somebody paying for it. Now, I think advertising should be handled, should be done ethically. It should be, and when we do ads, I think it's pretty clear it's an ad. We don't let it influence the content. We certainly don't sneak. I think it should never be sneaky ads. You know, ads should be clearly ads. Mm-hmm. But I you know, if people block ads, something's gonna have to happen. Either these sites will shut down. We don't have Dan's podcast anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a microcosm of exactly what's happening.
I mean, I walk down St. Catherine Street, the biggest street in Montreal, and I see the Molson Stadium, and I see the Scotiabank. There's no longer the movie theater. It's the Scotiabank movie theater. I mean,
that's ridiculous.
Absolutely, but that's what's happened with all these, because they can't afford to do it without turning to some form of monetization.
Yeah. Anyway, something's going to break. Something's going to go here. NASA launched a new lunar mission to investigate glowing moon dust. John's awesome. So excited about this. The Laddie blasted off a couple of nights ago. John, you're going to have to explain this to me. There's apparently been a question for 40 years back to the Apollo 17 mission. Eugene Cernan saw what he described as streamers, an aurora borealis effect bursting from the lunar horizon. And we've never in 40 years, figured out what the hell's going on there. So we've launched a program, Laddie, to try to solve this mystery. So there, NASA's still alive. It's going to use a laser-based, this is the thing that's really cool. John, so he's jumping up and down. A laser-based communication system, basically giving us broadband access to the moon at 238,000 miles away. That's pretty cool. So Laddie will be collecting information and sending it back here at megabits a second. But we still can't figure out how to get high-speed internet in half the country. But that's, you know, lasers.
I don't know if Alex Lindsay's up there doing a hangout for the whole thing.
I bet he is. Yeah. Knowing Alex, he's on his way. We will be covering, as I mentioned, the live announcement at the Apple Town Hall. We can't be there, but neither can you. You can be there together with us, watching as it happens, starting 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 Eastern time on Tuesday. Please join us for our roundtable discussion right after Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie will be here for that.
Sir.
Also, we have the usual cast, Andy Iannocco. I think he got an invite, right? He's flying out. So he'll be in there.
Correct. Yeah, we should call him.
We will. I want him to, so you remember Becky Worley FaceTimed us from the demo area. And as Steve Jobs walked by, she said, Mr. Jobs, and asked him a question. Now that's reporting. And he says, well, I'm going to wait. I don't want to offend anybody. No! Offend
them, Andy.
And
he's playing the long game, Leo.
He's playing the long game. See, I offended him, and now look at me. Sitting out here on the step, looking in. Join us. It'll be a lot of fun. Hey, thank you so much for being here, Dan Patterson.
Thank you.
If you want to know more about what Dan is up to, you can visit the Sumall Foundation at Sumall, SUMALL.org. So a lot of the news that's coming from this is you.
Right? Yeah. Most of the content there is, and my stuff I'm writing at Medium and Twitter. But right, it is really this idea of maybe not explicitly subsidized journalism, but that's effectively what we're doing, and that is that we have access to data and we have the ability to analyze that data, and I have the ability to write about it, and so somebody should be doing that. So hopefully we can set some type of template where I'm writing about other fun stuff as well, video games and tech products for sure, but this is one way to say, all right, let's see if people really are into learning and understanding about the nuance of issues, not just the superficial, clickbait.
Based on big data like this visualization, yep, of the Syria crisis timeline, based on you have United Nations casualty count cross-referenced with refugee count, trend volumes of tweets and Google Plus search or Google searches, most shared articles, the timeline of the war, and you've correlated this. This is fascinating stuff. I mean, the merging of big data with news reporting, just fascinating. Really cool. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Well, hopefully we can continue to do more of that. So
Sumall.org. And we'll have you back soon. At Dan Patterson on Twitter. Renee Ritchie, he's going to be with us on Tuesday from imore.com. You will also be doing your own live coverage of the event. I don't want to undermine that. Where should they go to watch that?
We have imore.com/iPhone-event. We've got a big super page up there, and we've been putting, I don't like to call them previews because nothing exists yet, so it's imagining the iPhone 5S.
Will you have a live blogger in the hall?
No, we will be doing meta coverage, yeah, which Apple can tell their own story. They're really good at it. So what we want to do is provide context, right, color, and analysis of what they're saying, just to make sure that it jives with what we understand to be regular person reality and also how it fits into the bigger market.
Well, we're doing meta coverage. So we're going to take all the meta coverage and we're going to cover that.
Oh, it's like bidding a dollar on Price is Right, Leo. You just scooped all of us.
And you'll be one of the sources for the meta coverage. Great. It's great to see you again, Renee. And we'll have you for a Mac Break Weekly right after the announcement. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. Please stop by and watch live. In fact, if you're in the Northern California area, we're in Petaluma, about an hour north of San Francisco. We love having a live studio audience, and we've got a great one today. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv and, wave, everybody, wave. And you can be a part of our live show and get Kit Kats. There's still a few left, by the way. Please take them away from me now. If you can't watch live, you can get it on demand after the fact. All you got to do is go to twit.tv or subscribe wherever podcasts are aggregated. John Slonina, you're waving at me. Nothing to say? Or you wanted a Kit Kat. I'm sorry. No, he's our applause sign. I got to feed him. Yeah, there you go, John. All right. Thanks for joining us. Ready, everybody? We'll see you next week. Another Twit is in the can. Yeah, see? That's what John does. He's our announcer.